This is the I'm Mortal Show with Paul Fidalgo. This is episode 3, recorded September 25th, 2014. The truth is in the cloud.
Is it wrong to love an iPad? Is it weird to think of your smartphone as an extension of yourself? When we swipe and tap and touch these glowing panels of glass, are we just living a modern life? Are we doing something creepy? Or maybe coming closer to God? Gadget obsession is what we're talking about today on the iMortal Show, the podcast about our finite lives during the tech revolution. I have two most excellent folks joining me on the show today, starting with the ultra performer and science communication superhuman, Gia Mora.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Gia. And we also have the man who tweets about what parts of himself are overheating at any given moment, tech and Twitter expert, the lovely and talented Chris Sawyer.
Hi,
Chris.
Hi, how are you? Thank you.
Oh, so glad to have you both. Both of you, I am assured, share with me the defining trait for this episode. You know, we're very much into our technological gadgets to an extent that I would say is beyond mere contented usage. We have a kind of attachment to them, which, you know, at best might be called an enthusiasm.
I'm seeking to legally marry my iPad.
There we go. Okay, good. We're going to get into that. I was going to say, at worst, an obsession or addiction, or perhaps romantic relationship.
There you go.
So for the sake of getting things started, I just want to narrow the focus of what we're talking about. At least to start, we're talking about obsessions with the things in the category of internet-connected devices, smartphones, tablets, PCs, that solar system of accessories and complementary devices around that. So we can talk about how that compares to obsessions with other kind of objects, you know, like cars or stamps or something. But to begin with, I want to focus on these kinds of tech gizmos right now. So, Chris, you started us off perfectly right there. I knew it was safe to bring you on this particular episode.
Thank you. I gave you the clean version of what I was going to say. But
oh, good, good. Because I remember maybe it was a couple years ago now that you described to me your iPad as being a part of your arm.
Yeah, yeah. The iPad, now the iPhone, it's there, a part of my arm. It almost never leaves.
So it almost, okay, good. So if you can, in a general way, describe to me your relationship to your various devices.
It's very tender. It's a very tender relationship.
It's okay.
Talk to me about that. Yeah, it's obsessive, sure. Probably a little too attached to things, but it's also, it's become, for better or worse, it's become how I function, and it's become how I get through the day, how I manage my day, how I manage some of my time, how I get news, how I interact with the world, how I listen to stuff, how I watch stuff. It's just part of how I function in the world now, is that I have these things with me that do some stuff and that I use them a lot.
Yeah, I kind of feel like in many ways, you know, people talk about like this, the coming singularity, and how, you know, one day we're going to have technology embedded in us and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I kind of feel like we're already there.
Yeah.
Because yeah, we do so rely on these little windows into this kind of extended world, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Gia, what about you? So how, I don't know if you're obsessed with individual toys to the same degree that I know that Chris is and I know that I am. So where are you on this particular spectrum of psychosis?
Well, I live in the love-hate relationship, so I guess I'm on the schizophrenic mm-hmm. side of the psychosis. I don't know, the multiple voices in my head. because I love them. I'm fascinated by them. I want them. I covet them. I purchase them when I can afford them. But I also take intentional hiatuses, whatever the plural of that is, hiatai. And
let's go with that one. Okay. Hiatai sounds good. Yeah.
And I feel like, wow, life was really good when I wasn't curating every second of my existence and thinking about how I'm going to put a funny twist on whatever this interaction I just had with someone was, that's an inside joke that I now feel the need to share with everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that always gives me some perspective. Although I have to agree with Chris and that I, you know, and you too, about the singularity, and not even as far as personal computing kind of things go, but certainly for sort of, you know, systemic kind of community-wide issues. I mean, think about it. When the power goes out, it's not just that you don't get the microwave. I mean, you can't check the news, you can't watch TV, you can't check mm-hmm. your email, blah, 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 and you're like, oh, oh my God, I have to, like, when there's an earthquake and the power goes out here in California, the first thing everybody's on is on Twitter. And like, before I can even check Twitter to see, oh, was that an earthquake? There's literally thousands of people already going hashtag earthquake. And you know, that we're just, I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm in this love hate relationship. I love the fact that that's in the privacy of my own bedroom by myself at 2 a.m. I have this weird shared experience that's acknowledged by other people. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I go, did I really need to go and tweet about it? Did I really?
Oh, that's interesting because when I started this episode, you know, what I was really thinking of in turn. I was really thinking more in terms of the objects, but Gia, I'm really glad you brought it up this way because it adds that extra dimension to it, is the dependency on the services attached to them.
Yes.
So on the networks, on the feed of information that comes in, and that, I mean, that colors our interaction with the objects themselves. I mean, that might be the beginning of why we covet them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the object itself, which is a thing, but it's really the services that are coming through. It's really, it's the news I'm getting. When I say news, I'm talking about like comic book news.
Right. The important stuff.
Yeah. The important stuff. Yeah.
Broadway.com. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But the services that it provides, and the weird communication of it, that as much as we want to talk about how technology is divisive and separating people, mm-hmm. It also is, strangely enough, uniting them in this completely impersonal way, and it's essential to a lot of people's existence. I mean, how many people only telecommute? I mean, huge swaths of the United States government employees are purely telecommuting workers.
I purely telecommute.
Yeah. You know, I mean, think about all of that. What would we do if we had this was a question today about earthquakes. Like, what would happen if California had this earthquake and one of the fault lines, which is true, there's a huge water supply and electrical supply that comes over right across one of these faults. And they know that there's going to be an earthquake. They know that it's going to happen. You know, what will happen to Los Angeles when we lose water and power? Yeah. I mean, can you imagine the chaos that will ensue? Because 100 years ago, losing water would have been bad, but we all would have known how to deal with it. I can't go, I can't stop at a stoplight without checking my phone.
Right.
You know, it's sick. Like, I have to lock it in the back of the car because I will do it. I have no impulse control.
So we have two different kinds of obsessions / addictions that we're talking about then. So we're talking about, on one hand, what Gia was emphasizing, which is the addiction to the networks and the feed and the services and the, you know, it's the endorphin shot, or is it the dopamine shot, right? That every time the little ping goes off or the little at mention happens, you know, you get the little plus one.
What do I say back?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So you get that little squirt of dopamine in your brain. And so there's that addictive part to it, which is the software side. And then there's also the hardware side of the addiction, which is the obsession over the objects themselves. So just so I know where we all stand here. So Gia, what objects do you have? Just so I know what our frame of reference is. Is it you've got, and what is it that you wish you had instead?
Oh wow. Well, I'm gonna sound like such a troglodyte when I tell
that's okay.
That I still have a 4G Samsung Android, which is, it's fine. It's sufficient.
We're not judging here.
Yeah, there's no judging.
It's fine. And the only reason that I have a newer computer is because I've had two computers stolen, which I know, Paul, you understand this game. So anyway, I have a MacBook Air. Those are the only two like actual things I have. But I often think to myself, like, having been robbed as many times as I have, like, if all I had left was the computer and the cats, I'd be fine. Like, that's how much I worship my MacBook Air.
Okay, so you would still have access to the flow of information. It would still be there. Right. It may not be as convenient to get to it, but you'd still be able to get the dopamine shot, in other words.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so Chris, what are your babies?
So I'm looking at a little table here in the basement that has on it my MacBook Air, my ancient but still going iPad, the iPad 2, and an iPhone. And I actually take the MacBook Air with me to work almost every day. So I have all these three things that I always have at least like two of them on me at all times, pretty much.
And so you describe the iPad as part of your arm. You describe having a near, you know, marital relationship to it.
Yes.
I love
my wife dearly.
Of course you do. I'm not, you know, I'm only somewhat questioning that. Yeah, I'm not seriously questioning that, just a little bit.
Yeah.
So So for you, is it, do you distinguish between what is coming through the screen to the object itself? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I don't know that I do. Or I'm going to say I don't know that I do, but then on the other hand, yes, I do a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Because I'll put it this way. Yeah. I mean, this is not news that particularly folks who are into their Apple stuff have stronger feelings about the physical object in their hands than, say, someone who has purchased a Samsung product. And that,
right.
I don't think that's an unfair generalization. And Gia, I would imagine that you don't, you know, have a pitter-patter in your heart for your Samsung phone.
You're right. I don't. I wonder if I would feel that way if I were all eyed out. I don't know how to say
eyed out. Yeah. Whereas I got to actually take a look at an iPhone 6 this weekend. Ooh. I was passing an AT&T store and I felt a gravitational tug. They might have one in there that I could hold. Right. And you know, you don't have that with phones from other makers.
Right, but I mean, I think was it you, Paul, who you were saying that one of the other droids that you were kind of admiring its design, though, the other day?
Yeah. Well, a few of them. You know, I, for a while, because a long story that's not worth going into, I had a couple of Android phones that I was checking out because I was trying to hop around on carriers. It's not worth going into. But I had both a Nexus 5 and I also tried a Moto X. And the Moto X is a gorgeous little phone. It's very different. It's a completely different kind of design philosophy and language than comes from Apple. But you begin to see that there are different design languages that are, you know, equally valid and equally admirable when they're executed really well. And I thought that was an example of that. And the new ones that they just put out look like they're along those same lines. So, you know, I think part of the reason that the Nexus 5 maybe didn't excite me as much is because it didn't have that the object lust wasn't there as much, you know. I mean, as powerful and as cool as that phone was, there was something more exciting about that the design of the less powerful Moto X. And so Apple products, we know, create this, you know, like I said, this heart pitter patter. You know, there's an excitement about holding this device that has been designed within an inch of its life.
And it came from the infinite white room.
It came from the white heaven of Johnny Ive. Yeah, right.
But don't you think that's part of it, though, is that you're a member of that club? Like, that it's very much a members only jacket, right?
I had a maroon one of those and I miss it, actually. But it was a long time ago.
I'm sure you can overpay for it at any vintage store you go to.
That's okay. I don't think it would look good on me anymore. But.
But I mean, really, that's it, though. I mean, because if you have converted, if you've gone full Apple, right?
Yeah.
Like, I am an anomaly, especially for someone as tech heavy as I am, and being a, you know, actually being a developer, and an editor, and you know, I would be in one uniform thing. But it just didn't work out that way, and I, like I said, I'm ashamed to tell you that I don't have that I haven't fully converted, because that is that group think about it. You're special. You're a part of something. You think different, right?
When you use the word "I am ashamed to tell you that," you mean that facetiously, or is there, what's the tug in there?
I think there's a grain of truth in that, because like anytime I, you know, I've actually been asked by the Sirens. Here's a perfect time to plug the Sirens, because all the other ladies in the group have iPhones and they have their wonderful group messaging. And that's how a huge chunk of the communication is done. And I am not able to participate. And I swear to you, once a week at a minimum, somebody says to me, "Jesus, when are you going to just get the damn phone? Because this is a pain in the ass." And I almost want to hold out just to be like, "No, I just can't. I'm just, oh, I refuse to be like everyone else." But, you know, that's,
I like this idea, because this is something I want to talk about. You know, we should also talk about the obsessive keeping up with the news and all the developments and stuff. We should get into that.
Yeah.
But part of my addiction to that is watching a podcast called Mac Break Weekly on the Twit Network, which mm-hmm. I, you know, it's like it's my weekly show now. It's like my boys are on. I'm going to sit and watch.
My friend Leo
is there. And Andy Anatko, who's, of course, the favorite character on the show. Right. So Andy was talking about product launches, and, you know, they just released the iPhone at the time of we're recording this. The iPhone 6 and 6 Plus were released about a week ago, and huge lines, probably like record lines for this new device. They sold record numbers of them over the first weekend, And he was lamenting how back when the iPhone first came out, or when there was a first iPad, the huge lines and the Apple Store employees, of which, full disclosure, Chris and I used to be, Apple Store employees clapping people in and getting all excited about it and making a big, like being like a big cultural moment that this new world-changing device was coming out. Like, there was something genuinely kind of cool about that, because there was something genuinely novel and a device that really was going to make people's lives better was being introduced. And here were the people who were in that Apple early adopter club,
right,
who were all gathering and really putting themselves out and inconveniencing themselves to be kind of part of this. You know, mm-hmm. as silly as it probably still is, there was a grain of coolness to it. Whereas today, he said it's a little sadder, because it's really just another iPhone. It's cool. It's great. It's going to be a wonderful product. But there's no longer the members only thing anymore. Apple is now completely part of mainstream culture, not just mainstream tech culture. It's part of mainstream culture at large. Yeah. Right. Everybody's got iPhones. He says it's just a consumer product now, folks. I mean, it's a great one, but it's sad to see that it's now kind of just a celebration of raw consumerism of I bought the new thing first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that kind of sounds like where you're coming from there, Gia, and I'm wondering if that's even still there.
Yeah, I definitely don't get as excited. I mean, I think I'm excited by a lot of other things that are happening right now. Like, I'm super excited about the fact that the Indian Mars orbiter mm-hmm. was inserted successfully.
Mom.
Yes, and that it was inserted. It was inserted successfully.
It inserted, really? Did it insert, or perhaps did it? Maybe a different verb would be.
I can't even talk.
I don't think mom inserted anything.
I don't. I don't think so.
Is it really? It's called mom. I've missed this. It's called mom.
I don't know what it stands for. I forget.
Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Probably Mars orbit or something. Yeah. But I don't know.
A Mars orbiter mission, I think. Anyway, the point being that, you know, that I'm super excited about those kind of advances. I'm interested in solar technology. I'm interested in things that actually, you talked about revolutionizing our experience and our lives. Well, those are the kind of engineering feats that may actually affect how we are. If we can actually reduce dependence on oil, if we can actually, you know, understand more about our planet, or perhaps planets that we may later on be inhabiting, you know, that I think has a lot more profound effect on us than a new iOS, you know.
Right.
Oh,
but
wow.
That's more abstract, though, isn't it? I mean, I share your feeling about it, but I understand why it doesn't.
Yeah, me too. But the phone and the iOS I can hold in my hand.
Exactly. Well, it's why we don't want to fund science for the most part either, is because we don't see the bigger picture mm-hmm. of it, not knowing that that perhaps something that's, you know, discovered up there when they're, you know, not in particular with the Mars orbiters, but, you know, something that's happening on the ISS, something that gets developed up there. Nobody really understands the immediate application of it, but the long-term benefits of it are so much greater. But it isn't pretty, and you can't hold it in your hand, and you can't take pictures of your cat with it, and you can't, you know, sleep with it by your bedside. So it makes, like you said, it's very, very abstract.
So for the gadgets themselves, you are not necessarily tied to the physical object per se. So you're not, you know, going and, you know, admiring the slope of a MacBook Air's cover, and that's what draws you to it or something.
I do like the aesthetics of it. And which brings up something you'd brought up earlier, why these smaller things versus cars. And I do think it has to do with scale. You know, that it's much easier and it's less expensive in general. Like, what's the car that I covered? Oh, I covet rather the $100,000 Tesla. Well, where on earth am I going to get? I have a $12,000 car, and it's going to be that way until it falls apart.
That's interesting. Well, now, Chris, now, like me, I presume that you were into this stuff before iPhone was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, we had the folks who, again, before Apple was mainstream, were maybe really, really into Macs. And
I was into it before I had one.
Okay.
So I was I coveted the stuff. I coveted Apple stuff long before I had one. It was some years before I had one.
Well, they used to be far more expensive.
They were far more expensive. But I remember even the Apple Store here, the one we worked at, going in there and just sort of looking at, and I don't know what year this was. It couldn't have been that long ago, but it seems like a lifetime ago. Just looking at, you know, like the Mac Pro, like the big honking Mac Pro and a big, one of their larger displays, and just drooling over the thing and drooling over this big, glorious, wonderful display long before I was ever going to be able to buy one.
The point being that it's not, those things were not pocketable. Put it
no,
that way, you know?
Right. They were
and
not.
And I kind of was there too. My first Mac was in like 2004 or something like that. It was a laptop. But,
I beat you both. Holy cow. Really?
Oh, congratulations. Wow.
Well, my dad had a Macintosh back in the 80s. But anyway.
Ooh. Right, right. I had a clamshell in 99, the Ooh. Very first.
Oh.
And I hauled it around the campus of my college. And people were like, you're taking notes on that? I mean, it was unheard
what
of.
What is that?
Yeah.
You're taking notes on that. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, look, so there's like the old colored iBook?
Yeah, the clamshell iBook. It was teal. And I had all these this matching accoutrement. I mean, I really was fetishizing it at that point. Like, I had a pen that was the same color teal.
I love the way those things look.
Oh, they were beautiful. And let's face it, like, when you go into, like you said, when you walk into that Mac store, even before you had purchased a product, they have it down.
Oh,
They made tech so sexy.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the boxy PC, the 286, 386, 486 that we had in the basement as kids. You know what I mean? Like, so much sexier. Sexy, sexy, sexy.
So, yeah, they were already... not fashion items, but they were already symbols of your identity, right? I mean, they spoke to who you were. And so when I had my first Mac, you know, I was pretty proud to pull that laptop out of my bag and show the little Apple symbol. And this was before most people were carrying them around, you know? Like, now most laptops I see around are Macs. But at the time, no, it was all like Dells and stuff like that. And so I felt pretty special, you know, and I also had like an iPod that I had just gotten in around that same time. And again, it was kind of didn't hit mainstream yet. And so you felt like you were kind of on the edge of something, like you belonged to a club. And that's why maybe you would wait online for, you know, 7 hours or something to get one of these devices, because you would be in the know in a way that the poor folks who were still slogging away on Windows boxes and stuff didn't quite understand. Like, you knew something they didn't. And so I wonder if part of the obsession, because I have very strong feelings about design and aesthetics of the hardware. I think way too much about it. If you read my blog, you know that that's the case. I really ponder this stuff. And I think part of that stems from the way Apple used to be, of being that identity company versus just being a tech company. Because I'd always liked computers, and I always thought technology was neat, but it never made me have feelings before. You know?
Yeah, that's a good distinction, actually. But even now, I don't want to make the whole show talking about Apple. I mean, I guess we could.
I don't know why you wouldn't.
Really. It's what I do. Even though I don't get paid for it anymore.
Right.
Even now, you're saying it's sort of, it feels different now, but I still get some of that same kind of jazz when I'm using this stuff. And some of that is because every now and then I have to use something else. At work, I have to use a PC that has Windows XP on it. It's horrible. It's the worst.
So is the hamster that runs the wheel that powers it under your desk or on top of your desk?
Yes, the underfed hamster is under the desk. And he's very old.
Yeah, poor guy. His name is Clippy.
Clippy. So on the one hand, I still have this sort of jazz about some of this stuff. On the other hand, when I watched the Apple event, I got into it a lot. But I'm like, yeah, okay, great. There's new phones. Oh, they're cool. They're better than the old phones. And when I need a new phone, I need to get one. There'll be a good phone for me to get, and that'll be lovely. And I still get kind of a little... my heartbeat gets going a little bit. And when I watch some of that Apple event, particularly when it's the Johnny Ive in the disembodied Ive in the infinite white room,
right?
That got me for some reason, even though I thought it was completely bizarre. It worked on me.
Well, yeah, because they know how to show those off. And here's the thing. I mean, they continue to do arguably the best job of designing these things hardware wise. They are just, I don't know how else to put it, but they've just thought it to death. Right. And so every little curve and button and you know, a definition, it has been planned at and agonized over ad infinitum, and it shows. And so there is something kind of, oh, what's the word? I'll use a religious word. There is sort of an ecstatic experience about, you know, holding one of those and kind of feeling all the work that went into that. Thank you so much. I needed that. that you don't get from most other tech objects. Now that, right. But again, that said, I think a lot of other companies are either catching up or just running with a design language that is valid in its own right and interesting in its own right. That doesn't necessarily go along the same lines as Apple, but is still compelling and exciting in some of the same ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That new BlackBerry, it has a keyboard on it.
That bizarre BlackBerry.
It's bizarre looking. I don't mean to make fun of them. I think maybe there's something there, but.
Well, that's the thing. It's like even so as an enthusiast, you know, I have no desire to own it whatsoever,
no, right.
But I want to hold it. Right. Yeah. I want to get to know it first.
You know what I always thought was cool? I always thought the Windows Phone interface was really kind of cool.
It's very nice.
Because yeah, it's like, but it's also like, here's this other way of doing it. Here's mm-hmm. this different thing. Here's these tiles that you can read stuff on and tap on if you want some more information, I guess.
So here's the weird part. Yeah. See, this is like a whole conversation. This is kind of veering into a conversation about Apple having a spiritual connection to Apple, and that's fine.
Right.
But
I actually have another question for you, but go ahead and say what
you're doing. Okay, good. So I actually was, someone I know had one of the big giant Windows Lumia phones, and I was checking it out, and it's a lovely device. It's lovely. And the home screen and is fluid, and everything is, the little tiles are very cool and everything, but it feels like it's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's like, oh, this is a really good alternative to doing it from the right way.
That's what I, exactly. I know.
I mean, I'm going to go back to, you know, the true church over here with the iOS screen with all of its flaws. You know, our churches are flawed, but, you know, it's not perfect, but it is the one true way. Your way is valid, and I respect your way, but it's, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It does. I completely feel the same way. And I look at other things. I hold other things. This is a really nice device. Yeah, I get the same thing.
It may just because I'm accustomed to it, but yeah. I think there's also a little bit of like superior feeling, you know?
Yeah, I think there's something that they put in the coating that gets into your bloodstream.
It could be.
It seeps through the titanium.
Really, I mean, I really think it is, but.
Well, it is habit, and I say that word, pun intended, speaking of the church, you know, like it is something that we cover ourselves with, like, and say that this is genetically a part of ourselves, right? We say, ah, this is this thing that tells me who I am and what I believe. And it is valid in other forms. You go, okay, that works. Like I was just thinking about different content management systems for website developing. Cause I have a new client that I'm working with and she's got a different language than I normally work in. And I was like, oh, you can do this. But I actually had to find myself justify and go like, oh, it is possible to make something nice with something different than what I normally use. You know,
it is allowed.
It is okay. Yeah. There's nothing wrong inherently with it. And I think, I'm sure it is just experience, but I don't know. There was a moment where the only other computer in this house at the moment is a 10-year-old Dell laptop with XP, and it is not playing fair with the Wi-Fi. And so I don't have any more of the install disks, so I was gonna put Linux on it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I've never actually owned a machine.
You're badass.
With Linux. But I thought to myself, like, is that going to work? I guess I could use can I use OpenOffice in it? Like I had all these, it had this cascading effect. If you change your system, there's a cascading effect to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the other piece about like why the cult of Apple is so intense, is that you throw one wrench in it and, you know, suddenly all the things that talked and played all nicely together don't talk and play so nicely anymore.
And I definitely experienced that when I was playing with, when I had Android phones for a short time, was just kind of getting things to match up with something you take for granted, which is your iTunes library,
right.
Which for the past over a decade has now been the center of everything, you know, has done all my music listening, has been through my iTunes library, like all of it. And to have that suddenly like I need to have a kind of a hacky way to make that work now, was completely jarring, you know, just little things like that. And it makes you go, oh, forget it. I'm just going back to the iPhone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not worth the trouble.
I was thinking about that at one point, and then, but I think, in fact, we may have tweeted about it a while back. And I'm like, maybe I should get an Android. I should try this other thing. I'm sure there's good stuff. I'd like to learn something else. I could see how this works. I know you can play with Android more and customize it more, and that would be kind of neat to do. I'm like, oh, screw it. Why?
Yeah,
it's for a lot of time. Yeah, I know. I could have hacked any of the things and done. I've never done it. I kept saying, I'm going to hack my Apple TV. Not even close. Right. You know why? Because there are way too many other things that I can distract myself with at any given moment that I already own and are either currently being paid for already or are free. You know, like, I don't need to do an additional thing.
Chris, you said you had a question before.
I did, and this is Jay. Do you have kids?
I don't. I have nephews.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is maybe more for you, Paul. So I have it was related to one of the questions you have here that you had kind of given to us before the
podcast. This is the homework, folks.
Yeah, this is homework. So do you get, and I think you may have mentioned this before somewhere, do you ever get grief from people in your immediate family when you are on your device or seemingly on your device too much, or when you're on your device while you're doing something else?
Yes. The answer is yes. Yeah. And I'm glad you asked, because this is actually exactly where I wanted to take this next. Because yes, I do a little bit. You know, for example, my wife does not care about this stuff nearly to the extent that I do. Bless her heart.
But she did tweet at me.
She did. No, I'm not saying that she's like not interested in technology or anything.
No,
you know,
I believe
but
that the interwebs have called her a social media maven. I believe that exists.
She is a social media maven. Yeah. I mean, she works for an ad agency. She did social media for them. Yeah. So it's not like she's a technophile. Right. I mean, a technophobe or anything like that. But she just doesn't care about it in the same way that I do. Like, this is like the distinction between the person who is obsessed or addicted to their device versus someone who uses it more as a tool. Mm-hmm. Although, mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into that in a second. So, yes, I mean, she definitely is sometimes made uneasy if, like, we all pile into the car or something and she's driving and I go right to check my phone or something. She finds that as kind of an objectionable first behavior when we all are in the same spot. Put it that way.
I am familiar with this type
which
of thing.
Which I totally get. And so we do try to... There's no written rules or anything like that. Nothing that's been stated outright. But I think we are trying to be more mindful of when, particularly when the kids are around, of not having our faces staring into these devices. And this is really something I wanted to get at, too, because I agree with that. You know, I do think, you know, when my kids are around, I try not to be buried into my phone, you know, on the whole, it's not to say that I'm not allowed to check it. I don't think cold turkey rules are necessary, but I do try to not do that as much. So I don't disconnect from them too much. But at the same time, you know, Jessica, my lovely wife, who's wonderful, will also kind of disappear into her phone sometimes too. And she doesn't think of it in the same way. She's not as interested in the phone itself, but she'll get lost in Facebook or something, you know, because it just happens. Cause that's just, it's designed to suck you in that way. And so she's, you know, she's vulnerable to it as well. So we try to be more mindful of that, but I've always kind of bristled at the idea that if you are looking at a device, at a screen, that you are, therefore, quote, disconnected from reality.
I bristle at that idea myself. I do.
Yeah, too. Because I feel like particularly someone like me, and I imagine this is also the case for you guys too, that and Chris, we talked about this on the previous episode, where a lot of ourselves is expressed through these devices. Yeah. Like, we use it as a way to amplify or just place ourselves in different contexts that we couldn't otherwise be in. We may not be immediately connected to what's going on in the physical space we're in. And I think it makes sense to be mindful of who shares that physical space with you before you make a decision of what you're going to be doing. But just because it's on a screen doesn't make it any less part of real life.
Well, I mean, that's the point, is I think we've changed the definition of what quote unquote reality is, right?
I think some of us have. I don't think as a whole we have, but I think a lot of us have. Yeah.
Yeah. So the definition is changing,
I would say. Yeah.
I think that's a good point. There's a great New Yorker cover where it's a family all sitting around together. I think I want to say it's like two halves. And one half of it is like a family in 1940 and they're all sitting around staring at the radio. And on the bottom half of it is a family and they're all sitting around but staring into their eye devices. And there's likewise another New Yorker cover of Halloween and the kids are at the door trick-or-treating, but the parents have their faces in the phones, but you can't tell whether their faces are in their phones because they're distracted or because they're capturing this moment of their kids trick-or-treating. And it's this kind of, you know, half of one, six of one, half
and that's
dozen
the thing
other.
Of, I, that's always bothered me about the whole get your face out of your phone thing, you know, when people bristle at that, is because, you don't know what that person is doing on that phone.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, maybe the chances are that 90% of the time, most people are doing nothing interesting other than skimming through Facebook. You know, maybe that's true. I don't know. But they might be reading War and Peace on the damn thing. They might be editing a video. They might be doing very important work. They might be reconnecting with someone very close to them.
Or
playing Two Dots.
Which
right.
is really important to me. Right now.
I'm sorry, Chris, do you need a break?
No. I mean, not right this very moment, but in this period of my life, Two Dots is taking over little much.
I've been there.
I will admit, but anyway.
I saturated on Two Dots and I had to stop. I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so what constitutes for some people when they see it as an obsession with your device, an addiction to your phone, I don't think that that's necessarily fair, because I think that the, like we just were talking about, maybe there is an addiction, maybe there's an obsession with a service with the dopamine squirt, but maybe there's also, you know, something of substance that is being done with these incredibly powerful little rectangles.
Do either of you read Motherboard? There's a, it's a blog or a website, one of those things that you find on the internet.
It is an internet location.
Yeah. And they had an article yesterday, and it was about media multitasking and how it's associated with lower brain density. And I won't be able to, I can read from some of this. I won't be able to really explain this very well because my knowledge of neurology is not so hot. But it shows, and this is about media multitasking. So this is like watching TV and being on Twitter and reading an article, which is something that I do kind of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So what this research showed is that when you do that, I'm going to read this here.
Go right ahead.
People who tweet and watch Buffy at the same time have less dense gray matter in the brain's anterior cingulate cortex, the ACC, which is a region of the brain that has been associated with cognitive abilities. So they've also shown there's studies that when there's like depression or gray area in the ACC, people who have post-traumatic stress disorder and depression and anxiety also have gray matter in the ACC. Now, they're not exactly linking everything just yet. They're just showing that there's similar results in this part of the brain from these different activities.
Right, and the question is whether is it correlation or causation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. But it made me kind of go, oh, I do that all the time. And I also have this feeling of, Gia, you mentioned earlier this need. I need to curate everything. I need to go check my feeds and see what's going on. I need to share that with people. I need to tell people this is happening and share this thing I read. And I need to read through all these feeds because I bookmarked them to read later. And the bookmarks are getting longer and longer, and I have to go through this stuff, but I don't.
Mm-hmm. I have a very full Instapaper queue that is sitting there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's overwhelming.
It is. It's completely overwhelming, and I get overwhelmed with some of the things that go on in the social media space that we talked about before a little bit, and news that's happening, what have you. And it does get really overwhelming. And in fact, some of that is my reaction to some of the you know, new device is coming out. Apple comes out with a watch. Okay, great. I'm kind of tired.
Right. I mean, that's why we multitask, right? Is because there's only a finite number of hours in the day. So you have to get in all the things that we're quote unquote supposed to get in. And you're trying to jam it in there. I think it's really weird that they said you're watching Buffy. I was like, really? What year is it now?
Yeah, I think that's what they did in this test. I think that's what they used for the test.
Okay, it wasn't just a like, so you're watching Buffy.
It may have been a random selection from that the reporter used, but it may have been that's what they did in the test.
Okay, well that would make sense then.
Yeah. I don't know why they picked Buffy. I mean, why not?
But it's a fine choice, but
I just think it's an interesting question of whether it's correlation or causation. Like, do people who were more than likely prone to these things already find themselves, you know, drawn to this multitasking, or is it that the multitasking is causing this? I mean, there's, I know extremely little about the brain, but you know, there's a lot of question of how do you build folds in the brain, right? How do you strengthen your brain? Is it possible? I have a joke in Einstein's Girl about that, you know, Einstein had extraordinary folding patterns in several parts of his brain. And they don't know whether that was a genetic gift that he was had upon birth or whether that was developed. They don't know because they obviously weren't dissecting his brain while he was growing up.
One hopes.
What I worry about for myself, at the same time that I'm addicted to and obsessive about these things, at the same time I'll defend it, and I agree with everything Paul just said, I also know that I'm going to use some of this stuff maybe as a way to retreat or hide or not deal with some things. And so I go through different periods of time trying to be more conscious or just surrendering to all of that. A couple of years ago, actually, I was at, I'll share this, what the hell. So I had a therapist who shared with me some of the writings of this guy named Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh,
Vietnamese
yeah.
monk, yeah. He did a lot of writing, and he's really good. I need to go back and kind of read some of his stuff again, because it really resonated. It was very simple, but it really resonated really well. It's about mindfulness and just being aware of the moment, living in the moment, being present in the moment, and recognizing the moment.
I don't know what
you're talking about. And even if that's – exactly. I know. It's hard to do.
I'm angry and scared now that you're talking about that.
But the one thing that they have proved about mindfulness is that those people do have other neural patterns in their brains.
Yeah, sure. But the other thing is, like, I need to be just conscious. I'm playing on my phone now, and that's what I'm doing right now. And just be aware that that's what I'm doing right now. I'm playing on the internet, and that is what I'm doing right now. You know, just to kind of
check in with yourself.
Aware of what I'm doing.
Yeah. Right. And are you distinguishing it from working on the internet?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there was, and I had this in the homework notes that I added late, so I don't know if you guys saw it, but during the holidays of 2013, Apple had an ad. I think it's called Misunderstood. People refer to it as the sullen teenager ad, where long and the short of it, the ad is a big family reunion, get together in the snow for the holidays. Then the teenage boy is kind of aloof and he seems not interested in anything. And you kind of worry about him while everybody else is having fun, love and happiness. And then Christmas morning, everyone's opening their gifts. And his gift is he walks over to the Apple TV. He types something on his phone and he shows that this whole time he has been putting together this gorgeous family holiday video that shows that, yes, in fact, he was being a part of things just in a different way. And he was using the iPhone to do it and to express himself in this certain way. And so a lot of people kind of rolled their eyes at this, like, this is ridiculous and how silly and groany and everything. But to me, I was like, you're all a bunch of snide, heartless jerks, because that's how some of us are. You know, if some, like, you know, I'm an introvert to the, you know, nth degree. And big family gatherings are overwhelming, and particularly when I was a teenager, they were rough. And
they were awful.
Right, but that doesn't mean that I
would have killed for an iPhone then.
Right, but it doesn't mean that I didn't love my family any less. It just meant that I didn't know how to express it in the same way. And so to have had a tool like that, to be able to do something like that, I'm not saying that I would have gone and made a damn holiday video for them, but the idea being that these devices now can enable folks of different dispositions to express themselves in different ways, that's not an addiction per se. It may be also a dependency, but it is also an enabling tool.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, judging others based on their use of that technology is also a big thing. And it kind of got me thinking about, you know, how people tweet or put on Facebook, like, don't even ask, right? So we all use it in different ways. I mean, some people use it as attention seeking. Some people use it as distraction. Some people use it as, you know, a tool. Some people use it, like you said, you know, surreptitiously to create the best Christmas gift of the day.
That's what most people are using it for, right?
right. So, I mean, I guess, boy, do I sound like every, like, humanities or civics teacher I've ever had, but you know, context is everything, mm-hmm. right?
So earlier I brought this up and I just want to kind of check in with you guys on this. So how much are you keeping up with new technological developments in this space. And again, Gia, I know that you are following real science as it develops, so that doesn't count. Okay. How much are you guys following the consumer technology space? So I'm talking like the newest stuff from Apple and Google and Samsung and Microsoft and Amazon and all those guys. Like, are you following the development of these new devices, and what does it mean to you to do that?
I was trying to follow very closely the iPhone 6 launch because I was very hopeful that the iPhone 5 would get cheap enough that I could buy one. But I was so frustrated because there was no release date announced. Like, they really were tight-lipped about it, and the only information I could get was totally unreliable foreign press. And that just aggravated the hell out of me. And then it all came very, like, this flood. And that's just a general critique I have about most of this stuff. It's, you know, they're blitzes of information, you know, that you want. We'd like, you know, just a little bit of research. You could find out just something about it, and then it's nothing. And then all of a sudden it's over and it happened and it's done and nobody talks about it and nobody cares. And you're like, well, but I was in the bathroom.
So you felt that way for the Apple stuff?
I did. I mean, like, there was, and maybe it's because I was too anxious too early. And that could be.
Well, I'm not sure, because I'll tell you, I mean, and Chris knows this too, is that, you know, as far as Apple is concerned, the rumor mill for Apple is second to horridly none. The rumor mill for Apple and its industry is just astounding. I mean, entire careers are built around finding, like, oh, look, I've got the mute button on the next iPhone, and here's a wow, surreptitious picture of it. And so the news about that kind of stuff trickles in at a really, you know, a fairly steady clip pretty much all year. And you know, and some people follow that, like, every single bit. Like, look, it's the volume rocker. Can you believe it? There it is. That's the volume rocker, all fresh off the Chinese production line.
And sometimes that stuff, sometimes it's totally wrong.
And right, yeah, yeah. So
Right.
So you're saying that you're having trouble getting the information you want about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, maybe I'm just an idiot. I mean, I thought I was pretty good at the Googlings, but I mean, I guess I wasn't really necessarily looking for, oh, what is the, you know, curve ratio of the new size, you know, the Gorilla Glass.
Why not were Gorilla you not, Glass? Why did you not want to know that?
I know. I was. I just don't care. I was like, well, what's the price point and the launch date? Like, can you just tell me the pertinent? But again, I guess it's because I don't have the same kind of, you know, worship.
Right,
of
you're not worshiping the hardware.
The detail.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, Chris, I know that you do follow this stuff.
I do, and I follow it a little, much less intently than I used to. Mm. And I go through waves of diving into it more, and then I'm listening to the whole TWID network, and then I back out for a while. But I'm aware of stuff.
So I guess the question is then, is like, what draw, since, you know, we can't own everything, right? We can't own all these devices. We can't even get review units, because, but maybe one day, guys, if this podcast really takes off,
get review units,
right? Okay, so let's really work to promote this thing, guys. So we can't own all of these things. We can never have all of it. So why do we care about every iteration of every iPhone or Moto X or Nexus device or something? Like, why follow
it? I just have an interest in the it's just an interest in the technology. Although there's another part for me, which is that since people that I deal with in other parts of my life know I have an interest in some of this technology, they're going to ask me stuff. So I want to know what it is they're asking me about, so I can be slightly aware of it. That's a part of it, honestly. But I'm interested in technology as a whole. So I can't tell you, like, what Samsung phone is out right now and what the current model is. I don't know what the current OS of Android is, but I kind of am vaguely aware of when that stuff is happening. And I do know about the new Square BlackBerry phone, which I swear to God I'm not making fun of, but it is kind of weird.
It's weird. It's definitely weird.
Yeah.
See, now I could tell you all those things.
Right.
And so I do have a kind of this is my geekery. So from, you know, recalling episode one here.
Yes.
This is part of my geekery, is that I like to follow the developments of this industry, even on the gadgets that I don't own. So this is interesting because we're all three kind of coming from a different perspective. I think I've got more of an obsession over potential gadgets that are not actually here. Chris is more attached to the gadgets he does have in a romantic way, and in a way that may one day be legal.
I like the word tender. tender.
Oh, I like that. In a tender way. Thank you. Yeah. That's a much better way to put it. Yeah. And Gia, her obsession is more about what those gadgets are providing as far as her attachment to a larger network. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
That sounds good. But the other thing, too, for me right now, there's a lot of Star Wars rumors, and I have to know every single
one. You only have so much space and time.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right. Ooh, I understand that.
I don't have room for anything else other than worrying about, like, what the phones, which is ridiculous. Hearing me talk about it right now, it feels ridiculous. Like, I really need to get into more different things.
Yeah, I do feel, I mean, in general, like I said, sometimes I take these hiatus, and, you know, even letting go of all the podcasts and going, delete, you're off of my computer. And the actual joy of that, I don't know if you guys, I use my email inbox as my to-do list. And like when it caps like 120, I start having panic attacks, you know? And so it's like, oh my God, anything I can do to just delete, get me out of here. And even if it means being like, what email? I didn't see an email that sometimes you just have to kind of be willing to lie about it just because it is totally overwhelming. And I would like to know more about all that other stuff, but I can't. Yeah. Time.
Well, you know, as we're about to find out, once again, Gia's life is actually so full of interesting things going on that
I would like to know.
There's no way
things.
She could possibly have time to worry about things like the latest developments in the HTC line of mid-range smartphones. There's no way she could fit it into her busy life. So, Gia, part of that busy life includes a new online project known as the Sirens, Sirens. Can you tell us very quickly a little bit about that?
Absolutely. The Sirens are screen sirens for science, and we are an online and soon to be in-person science advocacy group, bringing awareness to the public about the importance of science education, and the incorporation of science in entertainment content.
And so what does that mean exactly? Because that sounded very lovely, but what is it you're going to do?
Doesn't that, I know. Wow, what a great mission statement. Can you actually do anything? It means that generally we share science news through our Twitter feed. The website is intended to have a pretty hefty blog, which will soon be built. I mean, it's there, but there's not like massive archives already sitting there.
Just launched.
And they just launched, yes, yesterday at 9 a.m. And we also work as social media ambassadors for science and science entertainment related events. So there's a big festival going on here in California called the Axis Festival, which is the nexus of arts and science. And it's a 2-week-long festival in Pasadena. So we've been covering that. We'll also be, I think, attending the Gina Davis Institute on Women in Film, and be covering information about that. So not only just as a social media presence, but then writing about it, blogging about it, creating awareness for it. And then ultimately the goal of Sirens is content development. So I already have my show, Einstein's Girl, which is a stage show that is about love in the 21st century.
Einsteinsgirl.com.
Thank you. And so that's sort of, that's a good example of what Sirens is aiming to do, is creating a lot of it, in addition to the advocacy work that we do and the science, the sharing of science news, but to have this content that brings science to people who may otherwise not have come to it, and to present it in an accessible and fun way and engage them in it and to spark their curiosity.
It's a great and fascinating campaign. There's a whole piece on IO9 all about it. And the website is sirens.com. Is that correct?
That is correct. Sirens.
Definitely check that out. Chris, I'm not doing anything nearly that interesting. How about you?
I want to be you. That's cool.
Come and hang out. You could be an honorary siren. I swear to you.
There's no two ways around it. Having Gia on the podcast on a regular basis at all is a little intimidating. I'm not even kidding.
I know. And I keep trying to dissuade you from that because it is just, it's pure hype. It's total and utter hype.
It's very effective hype. It's very effective hype. Not unlike Johnny Ive and his Infinite White Heaven.
There you go.
Yeah. So, Chris, we can find you online at Video Sawyer. Is that correct?
That's correct. On the Twitter. And and then I just, in the day, I help the people.
And it's, you know, it's not hype filled, but it's really, really important stuff.
Lots about my pants.
Yes. Guys, this has been really great. Thank you so much for being on the show with me. Gia, thank you so much. And Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the iMortal Show. Check us out online at imortal.co. The show is produced and hosted by Paul Fidalgo, and our theme music is by Smooth McGroove.